Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and here we go with the Thorn in the Side Thursday version of the horn. It is, in fact, Thursday, the 12th day of January 2017. 8 days. 8 days.
Yeah, really.
8 days till, I guess, we, what, begin swirling down the... Yeah. Okay. This is, of course, that Thorn in the Side Thursday, as noted, the 12th day of January, 2017. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I got a feeling we'll be busy this evening. We got a lot of busy, busy days ahead of us. And in fact, this is a listener-supported broadcast, and big thanks go out to our subscribers. We always need subscribers. We always need more subscribers. We'd like to eventually get to $410 a month subscribers. We're just not there yet. But if you are a subscriber, thank you. And thanks in particular go out because we ended the program in a hole last night. Happens. But we had help. We had help from Mark in Minnesota. We had help from Charlene in Rhode Island. Help from Christopher. Help from Angelica in Portland. And help from Snork in Iowegia. All of which worked together. All of which worked together to keep us from having a truly monumental hole to dig out of. Instead, we've just got our regular $200 per night, plus a little bit of an overage. We've got about $280 to raise this evening. That's one at 280, two at 140, four at 70, eight at 35, 16 at 1750, etc. And hopefully we will knock that down sooner rather than later so that we can so that we can quit sweating and fretting. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, of course, you can always help out by sending checks and money orders, oh Mr. Soros, to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 258. 01. Okay, that would be great, because we've got a second week of January, bills are piling up, waiting to be paid, and paying a little bit here and a little bit there, and one of these and not that, and holding on, and hey, you get the idea. If you'd like to become a subscriber, just on the PayPal interface at headonradionetwork.com, under the tab Contribute, just click that little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. And you'll be part of the process whereby you can set it and forget it and know that you're helping to keep progressive, independent broadcasting alive month by month. You know, for cheap. So we've got, so that takes care of all that. I seem to recall a while back making a statement along the lines of, no one really knows what American fascism looks like, feels like, sounds like. And we still don't know, we don't know in its full-on capacity yet, but we're beginning to get, what are we going to call this? A hint. Yeah, a hint. Here's one of those hints. So we talked some about the atrocious behavior of POTUS at his alleged press conference yesterday. It was more in the way of a, and they all will be, a self-congratulatory circus of madness. I'm of the opinion that the man truly is mad. But the whole thing that took place with regard to Jim Acosta from CNN, who is not exactly a fire breather, but who simply stood up for his employer when Trump decided to slander Chicken Noodle News. Well, the blowback is beginning against Mr. Acosta. At the press conference, when he continued to try to press for a question of Benito Chito, the non-president, when he did that, Sean Spicer, who will be the press secretary for the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, went to him and said, "You make another noise and you're out of here. We'll have you dragged out." And then Sean Spicer continued on Twitter, of course, "Regardless of party, at Acosta behavior was rude, inappropriate, and disrespectful. He owes at real Donald Trump and his colleagues an apology." Bullshit. The only apologies that are owed by Trump for getting up there and being the bully boy that he is and trying to single out organizations that he doesn't like. And then the bandwagoning started. Randy Weber is a nasty right-wing Republican from, of course, where else? Texas. And he took to Twitter today to declare the CNN reporter who was disruptive to the press briefing and disrespectful to Trump should be fired and prohibited from any press briefings. Yes, of course, because the only people we want at press briefings are sad, sick little sycophants from the likes of that website that rhymes with light and fart. But in case you were wondering what fascism looks and feels like, this is what fascism looks and feels like. This right here. Attacking, and remember during the campaign when Trump's little goose steppers and hood wearers began taunting people in the press pen, screaming, "Lügenpresse, Lügenpresse, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil!" Because they did that. Well, this is an extension of that. And CNN will be called upon to abase itself before the high and mighty Trump in order to continue to have access. And access is the mother's milk of the for-profit media. access is why outfits like Chicken Noodle News and Joe Scarborough and Mika and it gave them CBS and ABC. It gave away billions of dollars worth of free publicity to Donald Trump in the course of his campaign. So, look for more of the same. A member of Congress calling on a man to be, calling for a man to be fired from his job, you know, for doing his job. But there will be, more of this. What does fascism look like? Well, fascist leaders stand together. The fascist authoritarian in Turkey, Recep Erdogan, the strong man there, issued a statement. He praised Trump's decision to refuse to answer a question from Acosta. Erdogan says Trump's treatment of Acosta was similar to actions he's had to take against critics in the media there in Turkey itself. During the Gezi protests and PKK terror campaigns, the unit and solidarity of the Turkish nation were attacked. This from Erdogan. Those who carried out that game back then in Turkey have done Trump wrong. Mr. Trump put the reporter of that media group in his place there. It is not a matter of fault that we don't know what fascism looks like, because the generation that saw fascism up close and personal is mostly dead now. Just like the generation who would have roasted any politician on a spit for daring to suggest that that Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid should be cut are long dead. They died out in the administrations of Ronald Reagan and Pappy Bush. And so consequently, in the absence of a knowledge, a working knowledge of history, we're not necessarily going to be able to recognize fascism when it happens, unless we're really paying attention. And this little moment from yesterday is it, the real, genuine article. Laurel with a note. Laurel says Donald Trump will never prosecute Hillary. After all, he has an affinity for Goldwater girls. Now, look, there's not going to be a prosecution of Hillary Clinton. Any more than there's going to be a big, beautiful wall that runs all the way from Texas to California. And maybe out into the Gulf of Mexico. Who knows? But one thing is coming to fruition. And it happened in what Shakespeare referred to as the dark, still, and dead of night. In the wee early morning hours of this Thursday, the 12th day of January, 2017. All those precious little Trumpanzees who said they voted for him and figured he wouldn't really and for true do what he said he would do. Maybe coming to a rude awakening. At about 1:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, after a massive round of individual amendment votes, the Republicans in the Senate of the United States took their first big step toward taking health care away from about 30 million American citizens. Hey, that's a good word. Arthur pointing out Trump is a pissanthrope. Like I said, about 1:30 in the morning, the only the only Republican voting against this particular measure was Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. The rest of them got in line and marched. So, and that includes Susan Collins. So the next time you see some for-profit media report that talks about moderate Republican Susan Collins, who is known for her willingness to break with the Republican leadership, you know, I don't know. Well, maybe we can get that, take that newspaper story and put it in an envelope and send it to Scott in San Diego, not being mean to Scott, because the only thing that particular kind of reporting is good for is lining bird cages. And Punky could probably put the best use to be had to that kind of bullshit assertion. Because Susan Collins was right there. Chinless Mitch McConnell told her what to do, and she did it. And from here in West Virginia, Shelley Moore Capito, who cares so much for West Virginia's citizens, she stuck the shiv in good and deep and gave it a twist. Because as much or more than any other state in the union, this state relies upon the federal government for a substantial number of its citizens to be able to remain, you know, alive. Representative Keith Ellison of Minnesota, a Democrat, one of the co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, tweeted, "There is no repeal and replace of the ACA. There's just back to the bad old days. Make no mistake." A woman named Amelia responded to him saying, "As a breast cancer survivor, this is a death sentence for me." Another individual said, "As a brain cancer survivor, I have no idea what it will mean for me." One individual said, "As a stage 3 cancer survivor, I'm ineligible for life insurance and soon won't be able to afford health insurance. Is this how great again feels?" Another individual, "I have cystic fibrosis. If the ACA is repealed, people like me will lose coverage. People like me will die." And it goes on and on and on and on. The hashtag, in case you want to see how people are responding, on Twitter, a hashtag, save, S-A-V-E, save the ACA is where you want to go. But this is not hyperbole. The Senate of the United States in the wee small dead hours of this morning, voted to kill tens of thousands, if not millions, of American citizens. That's not hyperbole. That is a fact. Because they have no plan to replace anything. And they hate the Affordable Care Act simply because it was passed through the efforts of Barack Obama. Let's remember, the Affordable Care Act is, was, and always has been a Republican plan, first generated by the Heritage Foundation. That, too, is fact. Will in Chicago pointing out, Bob, their view is much like that of Ebenezer Scrooge when asked to help the poor of London. If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease. If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. This should be sufficient to garner the ire of millions of Americans. But then again, we're talking about millions of Americans who are already sick and are hard-pressed to get to Washington to march and carry signs and so forth. We've got a little bit of that experience here in the hills and hollers of almost level, well, West Trump, Virginia. The Trumpiest place on earth. Oh, yes, we did. Because there are lots of people in the Mountaintop Removal Sacrifice Zone who have been made sick, who have been made terminally sick, who have been killed by the poisons that blow and boil and flow off of mountaintop removal operations. And it is damnably hard to get people like that to Washington, D.C. to confront the people who support killing them. The Affordable Care Act is not dead yet. But it is coughing up blood on the porch. Oh, yes. This was a first step. This was a, how to explain this? This was a procedural step that leads to a reconciliation bill, which will be filibuster-proof in the Senate, by which Mitch McConnell can lead the effort to kill a large number of American citizens with every bit as much a right to go on living as he, Mitch McConnell himself, has. As Donald Trump has, as Paul Ryan has. What do you do? What do you do when you come to the realization? We talked a little bit about Joseph Heller's Catch-22 last week, maybe early this week. What do you do when you realize that someone is trying to kill you and you don't want to be killed? This was the fundamental problem faced by Yassarian in Catch-22. He didn't want to fly anymore because every time he flew, someone tried to kill him. Well, this is a little broader than that. Yossarian could try to quit flying. But how does an American stop participating or stop being subjected to the people who want to kill them? And, of course, our genteel for-profit media would never be so crass as to look at a Mitch McConnell or any other one of these fascist Republican punks and say, why do you want to kill Americans?
Well, we're just going to bring them some freedom.
No, they won't ask those questions. They'll ask them nice, soft, soapy questions so that they can, the Republicans,
well, Obamacare is a complete disaster and it's got to be repealed and replaced.
Yeah, okay. And then the next question will be something about, Melanoma's dress or Ivanka's clothing empire. Yeah, anything not to confront the reality that the Republican Party is openly at war with the people of the United States. And of course, there's a significant number of people of the United States who simply don't care.
He's going to make Mark great again, get rid of that Obamacare. Of course, I'm going to still have my ACA.
No, you're not, Cletus. Cletus is a good puppy. Sorry, I didn't mean to rouse Cletus there, Steve. And I know, and I think it's a function of Washington think, political think, that there's some notion that the American people,
wait, he's taking my health care away. I ain't going to let it on.
Uh-uh. Trumpanzees, who will be ill-affected by this as well, will march gladly to the gallows, especially since there won't be any marching required. All they'll have to do is sit there in the Barca lounger and wait for death to come knocking. Because they had health care under that one in their White House. But now that we've got a pumpkin spice twittler entering the White House, not so much.
But we're going to make Mark great again. It's just I'm not going to be here to watch all the greatness because I'm sick. I can't go to the doctor no more.
Mm-hmm. So here in a couple of weeks, we'll have the budget reconciliation bill. By then, the House version will be well on its way. And by that time, Benito Cheeto will be in the White House, and he'll have his great big bill-signing crayon in his tiny little grubby orange mitt. And they're going to do what they said they were going to do. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Oh, thank you very kindly. Thank you, Will in Chicago. Thank you very kindly for getting us started this evening. We have $275 in fundraising to go now. Thank you very, very much. Hopefully, Will will get a lot of company, and we'll knock that amount down so that we won't wind up with a Friday on the front porch where we're trying to raise $500 in one night. Those are hard. Okay. Ron and Raleigh, Subject line, I hate them. I'm just not sure I hate who I hate more. I was just listening to NPR on the way home. There was a report on the ACA followed by an interview with Steve King, Iowa, as far as NPR and other so-called news outlets. One thing they've done is always adopt the right-wing meme. The health insurance bill passed under President Obama is the Affordable Care Act, not fucking Obamacare. Yet every news outlet calls the law Obamacare. Call the law by its proper goddamn name. Another thing that chaps my ass is that reporters don't seem to understand that we have a health insurance system and a health care system that are not the same fucking thing, yet almost every reporter seems to think they're one and the same. As far as Steve King is concerned, I'd love to have his constituents live in his mean-spirited world. The one thing he said that pisses me off, see what I did there, is when he said he would have been happy if the health insurance system had continued as it was. I hate them, Bob. Just tell me who we should hate more. I got a third nominee, Ron. How about the people? How about the people who voted for him? How about the people who heard him say he was going to take their health care away and went and ran to the polls to vote for him nonetheless? How about the people who couldn't unify after the Democratic National Convention? Tawdry mess, though, that it was. And couldn't bring themselves to cast a single vote to keep a pumpkin-colored monster, a malevolent jack-o'-lantern, come to life from entering the White House. How about them? How about them? Laurel kind of working that side of the street as well. What scares me is not the president-elect, but that huge segment of society behind him who could pull off a Holocaust without even batting an eye. There are monsters among us, Bob. And they are everywhere. Everywhere. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for jumping in and helping out. We're down to $250 to go this evening now. Thank you very kindly, Mike. So, where are you on that? Why are we in this handbasket, and where are we going? How are those of us who are going to lose our health care supposed to feel toward a broad swath of our fellow Americans who, by their action or by their inaction, helped make that happen? I don't know. I don't know. Don in Central PA, subject line, what if? Concerning the press, what would happen if the next press conference, the media, NBC, CBS, CNN, etc., would either one, not show up, two, walk out when he enters the room, or three, turn their back on him? I know it'll never happen, but it would be interesting to see Squint and Mika and Joke Toad and the others. They wouldn't stand for it. Oh, the disrespect! Because, you know, it's not disrespectful to sign a death warrant for a couple of million American citizens and take health insurance away from 30 million or so, when we've still got 20 million or so that don't have health insurance to begin with. And you see the media operations being capitalist enterprises. Well, the central rule of capitalism is every man for every person, every entity for itself. So as long as CNN's getting the grief, well, NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, always Fox, the ultimate, you know, the ultimate Quisling. They don't care. As long as it's not them. It's like the old Jerry Clower bit about the guy who goes up the tree thinking he's going after a raccoon and finds himself with a wildcat. And hollers back down to the ground, "Knock him out, John! Knock him out, John!" John replies, "Oh, I can't shoot up there, I might hit you." And the fella tangling with the wildcats replies, "Don't matter, one of us up here got to have some relief." Well, see, that's what we're dealing with. As long as the ire of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is focused on, say, CNN and BuzzFeed, well, that means NBC and CBS and ABC and Reuters and AP and all the others are getting some relief. And it won't dawn on them that they had skin in the game, too, until he comes for them. If you did not see the presser yesterday, you might not know that he started out his remarks, if you can call them that, his stream of unconsciousness babble, by larding praise on to the New York Times for not publishing the piss papers. And I'm sure they just love that at the New York Times. And so, as long as things are good for them, they'll go along to get along. Yeah, you know, until somebody comes for them. And then they'll demand solidarity from the but everybody else, hey, we're getting some relief. So I take Don's question seriously. And if you could actually get the for-profit media together to act in concert, they might be able to impose a little bit of responsibility on this fascist punk who's about to take office. And his Klan and neo-Nazi supporters and the people who aren't Klan or neo-Nazi, but by God, enable them. If they could speak with one voice and say, listen, bullying media outlets that you don't like because you don't like the information is tantamount to treason for what it does to the First Amendment of the Constitution, something might happen. Maybe not, but it might. Or maybe he would just take to speaking only through Twitter. Because he's still doing that. How many Trumpanzees do you think have what used to be referred to as pre-existing conditions and will, once the ACA is repealed, be uninsurable. I'm one of those. I'm not a Trumpanzee, but I got pre-existing conditions. There will be no insurability for me. I take it personal. And then, of course, there's the question between taking it personally and making it personal. And I remind you of that, of the passage from which, from whence that line comes. Make it personal. Richard K. Morgan from Altered Carbon. The personal, as everyone's so fucking fond of saying, is political. So if some idiot politician, some power player, tries to execute policies that harm you or those you care about, take it personally. Get angry. The machinery of justice will not serve you here. It is slow and cold, and it is theirs, hardware and soft. Only the little people suffer at the hands of justice. The creatures of power slide from under it with a wink and a grin. If you want justice, you will have to claw it from them. Make it personal. Do as much damage as you can. Get your message across. That way you stand a better chance of being taken seriously next time, of being considered dangerous. And make no mistake about this, being taken seriously, being considered dangerous, marks the difference, the only difference in their eyes, between players and little people. Players they will make deals with, little people they liquidate. And time and again they cream your liquidation, your displacement, your torture and brutal execution with the ultimate insult that it's just business. It's politics. It's the way of the world. It's a tough life, and that it's nothing personal. Well, fuck them. Make it personal. And that the entirety of that statement is absolutely true. You know why Social Security used to be the third rail of American politics? Because American politicians understood that the American people, where Social Security is concerned, were dangerous, personally dangerous to them, because they would go to the polls and throw out any politician who ever talked about wiping out Social Security. But like I said about 40 minutes ago, the generation that would have done that died during the presidencies of Ronnie Reagan and Pappy Bush and Bill Clinton. Make it personal. But then the discussion has to be how? How to make it personal. I'm nonviolent. I don't advocate violence. But they must be made to learn. In that dead, dark, and still of the night action in the Senate, here's a few things that happened. An amendment was put to the floor that would have made it more difficult to take coverage away from Americans with pre-existing conditions. That impacts about 52 million people in this country. That's one in four people in this country who are not deemed elderly. Well, the amendment would have protected the coverage that they had for pre-existing conditions. And it would have protected coverage for people who had disabilities or chronic health conditions. The amendment would have kept health insurance plans from discriminating against people based upon the status of their health. That amendment was one instance in which the much vaunted Susan Collins actually voted with the decent people. She and Dean Heller from Nevada voted in favor of the amendment, but the amendment died. Just like a whole bunch of those 52 million Americans with pre-existing conditions will die before their time. Another amendment hit the floor, brought in by Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. And that's the amendment that would have let young adults stay on their parents' insurance. Once again, the Republican Party, with the exception of Senators Heller and Collins, voted to defeat that amendment. Gone. So there will be no staying on mommy and daddy's plan until you're 26. That's out the door. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand offered an amendment to maintain women's access to contraceptive coverage. It died. Then came an amendment to protect the Medicaid expansion in the states that accepted all the free money. Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey introduced that amendment. It died at the hands of the Republicans. Well, how about our precious little cheerins? You know, the Republicans, they're pro-life. You know, as long as the fetus is in the womb. Once baby's on the ground, tough titty, honey. You're on your own. Root hog or die, tough hide lasts the longest. Sherrod Brown of Ohio proposed an amendment that would make sure that children on Medicaid or CHIP keep their coverage. The Republicans killed it. Just like, by doing so, they'll be killing some children. Real children, actual flesh and blood. Not imaginary kids like, you know, little the toenail-sized blobs of tissue. Then there was Senator John Tester of Montana, who offered an amendment that would have protected the access of veterans to VA health care. The Republicans killed that too. You know, I'm so glad. I mean, we've got all this shit coming at us, but at least the real progressives can say that they're still ideologically pure. It feels so good. As someone who's going to lose his health insurance, that ideological purity means a whole fucking lot to me. I mean, it just gets me all... gets me right, but, well, somewhere. Laurel says, the biggest pushback I get on Facebook is from my own family members. Trust me, Bob, this has become very personal for me already. Steve writes in, subject line, sugar pills, blues. America doesn't have, never has had, probably never shall have, national health care. That it should is all too painfully, deathfully obvious. Corporate health care is not health care. It is a mortality pool. Ask the actuaries and accountants who crunch the numbers for the CEOs of the biggest private insurers. So long as the government doesn't provide health care for all, what is left amounts to a rigged system of privatized populations fit enough to fill the corporate coffers while the sick and aged fill the coffins. If you know this and continue to ignore just how evil it all is, you deserve to suffer and die anyway. Medicare, of course, is the answer. It always has been. But they're taking that too. And if you believe otherwise, better start stocking up on pills right now. Or used Bibles. Regards, Steve. In China. And of course, Steve's right. Medicare for all is the obvious answer. But when the Affordable Care Act was shoved through, we couldn't even get a public option because of the degree of influence and control that those self-same for-profit health insurance companies maintain over Democrat and Republican alike. But I still have to wonder, I do, how the insurance industry is going to feel about not getting that big old government money check every month, the welfare that flowed like a mighty river into the coffers of the for-profit insurance companies as a result of the corporate welfare that was a centerpiece of the Affordable Care Act. Are they going to like having that spigot turned off? Or do they stand to make more money simply by reverting to the status quo ante, as I think Steve in China is pointing to? A rigged system of privatized populations fit enough to fill the corporate coffers while the sick and the aged fill the coffins. Will they make more money doing that than they were making getting all of that corporate welfare? I don't know the answer. It's not a rhetorical question. I wish I did. But we now know, and of course, but what we know is immaterial. Is anybody telling this to the Trumpanzees? They're not allowed on this program. Right-wingers are not allowed on this program. Because we have to have somewhere that we can carry on a conversation with some safety and some decency. They're not telling them. I'm sure there was nothing resembling coverage of those six amendments. There was nothing about that over at Fox. Fox didn't tell the rubes. You know, you don't smarten up a chump. Fox didn't tell the chumps that they'd been fucked six times and then finally a seventh last night. Oh, hell no. So how are they ever going to find out? The if it bleeds, it leads local coverage from TV stations isn't going to tell them. They're at WFUK, Busted Knuckle, Kentucky. Hell no. There is no radio news outside of NPR, and, you know, Emery and Marvelline ain't listening to the NPR. Their preacher's not going to tell them from the fucking pulpit. Because the preacher opposed everybody having health care to begin with, because that's communism. And never mind that passage where St. Paul talks about we held all things in common.
That ain't what he was talking about. It's a different time.
I mean, even if you wanted to smarten up the chumps, the chimpanzees, how would you go about doing it in a nation as polarized, as hopelessly divided as this nation is? How would you do it? Again, not a rhetorical question. I don't know how you do it. I mean, it plumb beats the dickens out of me. That website that rhymes with light and fart, are they going to tell the chumps? Nope. They're going to tell them they're more free now than they ever were, because now they're free to get all dead for Donald. Freedom. Merca. Sieg Heil. Since there was a reference to The King and I a couple of nights ago by Tracy, we can always go fall back on Yul Brynner. "'Tis a puzzlement." Right? Maybe we'll sort it out. Maybe you've got answers that I don't have. Would not at all be surprising. If you do, feel free to share it. Arthur pointing out, the Bob Kincaid Radio Hour brought to you by Crystals and never by fucking Carl's Jr. Never by Carl's Jr. You know, I think the nearest Crystal for me is, it's about a 2.5 hour drive. It's on I-64 at the top of a hill in, I think, either Grayson or Olive Hill, Kentucky. It'd be a drive worth taking. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, motherfucker, because tomorrow we die. I hate being cynical that way. So let's take a break here at the end of the filibobster, and feel free to jump in however at your leisure. Again, we've got $250 to raise this evening, if at all humanly possible. 10 at 25, 25 at 10, 1 at 250, 2 at 125, 4 at 6250. Etc. Yeah, see, there's the problem. Part of the problem, Laurel points out, here in the rural Midwest, in all my 45 years, I've never once been able to turn on a radio and hear a liberal. Well, of course not. Communism. What do you want? You want the rubes to learn something?
Well, Bob, maybe we could start by you quit calling them rubes and trumpansies.
Okay, what shall we go for then? Special snowflakes? That seems to have some currency these days. Doesn't it? And of course, Ben Carson sat for his hearing today. GK dropped me a note. Ben $10 Carson, or as I call him, Sleepy Ben. Ben Sleepy Carson. Standard operating procedure, GK says, for these filthy nominated thugs by post, all seem to answer questions asked by Dems with the standard bullshit. Of course, they know full well that the bobbleheads won't question this. Carson babbled about a $10 gain as opposed to the potential billions that could be gained by the thugs. Moreover, the big head man babbled about our commitment to the Philippines when he was asked about the Philippine thug in charge of its drug war. Interesting enough, this question was asked by little Marco Rubio. Guess he just wanted to seem concerned for his bobbleheads. You have a stronger gag reflex than I do, Bob. I cannot stomach watching this at all. I understand, but I kind of have to. It's about 2 minutes past. We'll take that break. It being a Thursday, we have the Green News Report coming up with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to it. So, by all means, feel free to jump in however, whenever you want. Sparky pointing out a trumpansie is a mindless follower and believer of Donald Trump. Observe these primitive creatures from a safe distance as they are known to attack. Trumpansies are unevolved members of society known for nonsensical, sexist, racist, and inflammatory remarks. Their low intelligence makes them impervious to facts, and they seem to have an affinity for huge walls. Do not engage. Fox News is showing some trumpansie attacking a guy at a Trump rally. It's scary but fascinating to watch them all go apeshit. And there will be more and more of them going in that direction. I mean, this is where a little bit of the despair kicks in, because you know if you point out that they're gonna lose when they lose the ACA, you know. You know what the standard answer is? The standard answer is, thanks, Obama. Because everything will be Obama's fault or some liberal's fault or Hillary! And, of course, if you say Hillary loud enough, Glenn Greenwald will write a seventh-grade slap fight article about it. And all the real progressives will, oh, yeah, Hillary! The devil! As 30 million people march toward their deaths. Or some portion thereof. All right. That's it for hour number one of Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Sunshine. Break time. We'll be back.
I've been doing just fine. Psychiatrists tell me so. The scars are patched up, arms have almost healed. Demons almost tranquilized, pain's almost killed. Me and old Jack Daniels become the best of friends. We got all them Baptists to die for our sins. I know the Lord is coming, south will rise again.
Thursday, January 12, 2017.
The science behind the clear connection is not conclusive.
ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson gets a grilling on climate change during Senate confirmation hearings. Court orders Exxon to comply with AG's investigation into climate science denial. Six Volkswagen executives indicted in emissions cheating scandal. Plus,
in just 8 years, we've halved our dependence on foreign oil. We've doubled our renewable energy. We've led the world to an agreement that has the promise to save this planet.
President Obama appeals to reason on climate in his farewell address.
All of that appealing reason and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Our children won't have time to debate the existence of climate change. They'll be busy dealing with its effects.
Actually, they may be busy sacrificing their firstborn to Empress Ivanka. Thanks, Obama. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a protester at the Rex Tillerson confirmation hearings, I think might have had the most succinct expression of this moment.
Please don't put Exxon in charge of the State Department. Protect our children and grandchildren.
Exxon is about to be in charge of the State Department.
Yeah, it sure does look like that could be the case. On the first day of his Senate confirmation hearing to be the next Secretary of State, the CEO of ExxonMobil, Rex Tillerson, on Wednesday responded to pointed questions from Democratic senators about his beliefs on climate science and policy with a subtle level of denial. Unlike President-elect Donald Trump, Tillerson says he accepts climate change is occurring, but he said the science was, quote, not conclusive whether it's man-made, and downplayed the global scientific consensus.
The risk of climate change does exist. The consequences of it could be serious enough that action should be taken. The type of action seems to be where the largest areas of debate exist in the public discourse. The increase in the greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere are having an effect. Our ability to predict that effect is very limited.
Oh, well, it's happening, but we can't predict what it's going to cause, so let's just not do anything about it.
Yeah, except the predictions of climate scientists are already coming true earlier than predicted. The Pentagon and the intelligence community have warned that climate change is a major threat to national security and international stability, but to acknowledge that climate change is man-made would require Tillerson to acknowledge Exxon's role in causing it.
And of course, Exxon itself does acknowledge climate change, but they're incredibly vague about it.
Yeah, and speaking to that, Democratic Senator and former vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine of Virginia politely grilled Tillerson about reports that Exxon's own scientists confirmed man-made climate change back in the 1970s, but that the company instead misled the public and its investors for decades and paid millions to fund climate denial propaganda outlets.
I'm asking you whether those allegations are true or false.
The question would have to be put to ExxonMobil.
And let me ask you, do you lack the knowledge to answer my question, or are you refusing to answer my question?
A little of both.
Yeah, a little of both, because his company is facing some very serious investigations on this front.
Yep, on the same day, Exxon lost its latest court battle to block the investigation undertaken right now by Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey. The court ordered ExxonMobil to comply in turning over 40 years' worth of the company's internal documents on climate change. She's investigating whether Exxon misled its investors, a violation of state law.
So you already have this conflict of interest. You've got Rex Tillerson asked a question about his own company in this hearing for his potential appointment as Secretary of State, and he can't even talk about Exxon. I think that's just a taste of the conflicts of interest we're going to see from this administration for years.
Meanwhile, in other news, Volkswagen on Wednesday pled guilty to three criminal charges for intentionally rigging its cars to cheat on U.S. emissions regulations. Six high-ranking executives were also indicted on criminal charges for their roles in the scandal. The German carmaker will pay $4.3 billion in civil and criminal penalties, including violations of the Clean Air Act. Finally, President Obama used his farewell address as president on Tuesday night to remind Americans of the progress that the nation has already made on climate and clean energy, and to give one last call to rise above the deniers.
To simply deny the problem not only betrays future generations, it betrays the essential spirit of this country, the essential spirit of innovation and practical problem solving that guided our founders.
Yeah, maybe so, but denial makes a whole lot more money for the fossil fuel industries. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thanks for all the lovely delight I found in your embrace. I'm thankful though I know it's ending all too soon. And thanks for unforgettable nights.
15 minutes past the hour. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I am, of course, Little Ray of Sunshine, Bob Kincaid. And it's just sunbeams all over. We've got them all over the place. What a beautiful world. What a wonderful world. No, not so much. A couple of notes coming in. Mike, who jumped in on fundraising just a little bit ago. Thank you, Mike. Mike says, I could see the Trumpanzees et al. Blaming black folks and Mexicans for bogging down the health care system and painting them as lazy and the takers. But even more than ever before, you know, like Hitler blamed Germany's downturn on the Jews. Don't forget, Bob, the Trumpanzee's lifestyle is based on hate, fear, and paranoia. Discussion and arguing with Trumpanzees are about on a par with doing that with a drunk. Might actually be worse, Mike, because drunks occasionally sober up. Do you see that happening with the Trumpanzees? Hell, Trump yesterday told us he's going to be president for 8 years. Elections? We don't need no stinking elections. Marty, meanwhile, pointed out something that I guess had sort of slipped my mind. When I was asking about the Trumpanzee response to people dying, Marty reminded me, Bob, these are those same people who were applauding in 2012 at the idea of letting someone die without insurance. Just die. Remember when Ron Paul asked, well, what, do you want us to just leave them in the hallway? During one of the Republican pageants, and the Republicans in the audience just clapped and cheered. Woo! Skew! Woo-hoo! Yeah, let them die in the hallways! Woo! It happened! And thank you for reminding me, Marty, who continued and said, proof that the 25-year campaign against Hillary Rodham Clinton was very successful for the bumper I was going to suggest in light of Caligula's Trumpus, or should that be Trumpus Caligula's, and press secretary's treatment of Mr. Costa, that you dust off John Fox's Scotty the Duck. Oh, I'd forgotten about Scotty the Duck, and shame on me that I had. Well taken. Your point is well taken indeed. Thank you, Laurel, for jumping in. Thank you very kindly. $240 to go in fundraising. Maybe we can get there. Sure would be nice if we could. What else? Well, I know in over here on our side, especially among the real progressives, it is fashionable to engage in a term I coined earlier today, which I think will be entering my vocabulary more often than I care to admit. I know it's fashionable for some on the real progressive left to engage in vladulation. That's an elision of the word Vlad and adulation. Because he's just so snuggly and cuddly and he takes his shirt off and rides tigers and stuff. And golly, that's wonderful. But, well, enter a Russian journalist by the name of Alexei Kovalev. He has penned a letter addressed to, quote, my doomed colleagues in the American media. Congratulations, U.S. media. You've just covered your first press conference of an authoritarian leader with a massive ego and a deep disdain for your trade and everything you hold dear. We in Russia have been doing it for 12 years now, with a short hiatus when our leader wasn't technically our leader, so quite a few things during Donald Trump's press conference rang my bells. My doomed colleagues. You know, if you're a joke toad or an Andrea Mitchell, or, you know, one of the George Snuffleupagus, one of those people that cashes those really big paychecks, are you scared yet? Or do you think that you're so so elevated into the moneyed echelon that you don't have to worry. I don't know the answer. But I do know that if fascists decide they want your ass, they're going to come and get your ass. And it doesn't matter how big your bank account is. But let's go back to Alexei Kovalev. I know, the Purity Sparkle Ponies and Glenn Greenwald and that bunch don't want to hear it. But he might actually have something to say that might prove informative. Vladimir Putin's annual pressers, he continues, are supposed to be the media event of the year. They're normally held in late December around Western Christmas time. We Orthodox Christians celebrate Christmas 2 weeks later, and it's not a big deal, unlike New Year's Eve. Which probably explains why Putin's pressers don't get much coverage outside of Russia, except in a relatively narrow niche of Russia watchers. Putin's pressers are televised live across all Russian TV channels and attended by all kinds of media. Federal news agencies, small local publications, and foreign reporters based in Moscow, and are supposed to overshadow every other event in Russia or abroad. In point of fact, RT and Rosia both carried the Trump press conference yesterday. I'm sure it was just a coincidence. Just like the law firm he hired to bullshit people yesterday, just happens to be the most pop, the best American law firm in Russia. They won a contest for that. Anyway, Alexei Kovalev says these things are carefully choreographed, these Putin pressers. Typically last no less than 4 hours. And Putin always comes off as an omniscient and benevolent leader tending to a flock of unruly but adoring children. Given that Putin is probably a role model for Trump, it's no surprise that he's apparently taking a page from Putin's playbook. I have some observations to share with my American colleagues. You're in this for at least another 4 years, and you'll be dealing with things Russian journalists have endured for almost two decades now. I'm talking about Putin here, but see if you can apply any of the below to your own leader. Welcome to the era of bullshit. Facts don't matter. You can't hurt this man with facts or reason. He'll always outmaneuver you. He'll always wriggle out of whatever carefully crafted verbal trap you lay for him. And he did that yesterday. They asked him, have any of your staff had contact with the Russians? And because the Janie-on-the-spot, for-profit media elite press corps reporter asked a double-barreled question, that allowed Trump to evade question one and sort of give a bullshit answer to question two. Yeah. Anyway, whatever he says, you won't be able to challenge him. He always comes with a bag of meaningless factoids. Putin likes to drown questions he doesn't like in dull, unverifiable stats, figures, and percentages, platitudes, false moral equivalences, and straight, undiluted bullshit. He knows it's a one-way communication, not an interview. You can't follow up on your questions or challenge him. So he can throw whatever he wants at you in response, and you'll just have to swallow it. Some journalists will try to preempt this by asking two questions at once. Ha-ha! Against the protests of their colleagues, also vying for attention. But that also won't work. He'll answer the one he thinks is easier and ignore the other. Others will use this opportunity to go on a long, rambling statement vaguely disguised as a question, but that's also bad tactics. Non-questions invite non-answers. He'll mock you for your nervous stuttering, and if you're raising a serious issue, respond with a vague, non-committal statement. Mr. President, what about these horrible human rights abuses in our country? Thank you, miss. This is indeed a very serious issue. Everybody must respect the law. And by the way, don't human rights abuses happen in other countries as well? Next question, please. But your colleagues are there to help you, right? After all, you're in this together. Wrong. Don't expect any camaraderie. These people are not your partners or brothers in arms. They are your rivals in a fiercely competitive, crashing market. And right now, the only currency in this market is whatever that man on the stage says. Whoever is lucky to ask a question and be the first to transmit the answer to the outside world wins. Don't expect any solidarity or support from them. If your question is stonewalled, mocked down, ignored, don't expect a rival publication to pick up the banner and follow up on your behalf. It's in this man's best interest to pit you against each other, fighting over artificial scarcities like room space, mic time, or, of course, his attention. It's getting especially absurd because some, increasingly many reporters, will now come with large, bright placards aimed at attracting the president's attention to names of their regions or specific issues, and provides photographs of what a presser looks like in Russia now, where the reporters all carry great big signs. Also, some people in the room aren't really there to ask questions. That would be the cheering section that was present in yesterday's press conference. Expect a lot of sycophancy and softballs from your colleagues. A mainstay of Putin's press conference is, of course, softball questions, which also happen to be Putin's favorites. Mr. President, is there love in your heart? Who will you be celebrating New Year's Eve with? What's your favorite food? Gee, I remember the, what year was it? 2004, maybe? Or was it 2008 when the boxers or briefs question was posited at a Democratic primary pageant? Questions of this sort, sure to melt Putin's heart, typically come from women working for small regional publications. A subtype of this is also statements as questions, but from people who really love the man on the stage and will bob their head and look at the stage adoringly and say something to the tune of, Mr. President, do you agree that a lot of media are treating you unfairly? This question, this is me, not Alexei Kovalev, this question happened yesterday after the Acosta incident when a reporter from that website that rhymes with light and fart was called on and asked, what do you think we need to do to make the media better? Another type of softball question is hyper-local issues that a president isn't even supposed to be dealing with. Mr. President, our road is full of potholes and local authorities aren't doing anything about it. Mr. President, our tap is leaking. Mr. President, how about a chess club in our village? This is a real opportunity for him to shine. He will scold the local authorities and order to have a new road built. All of this, of course, has been choreographed well in advance. Also, some of these people really love him and will meet his every answer with enthusiastic applause. There will be people from publications that exist for no other reason than heaping fawning praise on him and attacking his enemies. Again, that website that rhymes with light and fart. But there will also be one token critic who will be allowed to ask a sharp question, only to be drowned in a copious amount of bullshit, and the man on the stage will always be the winner. See? I respect the media and free speech. It's almost like he wrote this after he... Well, next. You're always losing. This man owns you. He understands perfectly well that he is the news. You can't ignore him. You're always playing by his rules, which he can change at any time without any notice. You can't, in Putin's case, campaign to vote him out of office. Your readership is dwindling because ad budgets are shrinking, while his ratings are soaring, And if you want to keep your publication afloat, you'll have to report on everything that man says as soon as he says it, without any analysis or fact-checking, because one, his fans will not care if he lies to their faces. Two, while you're busy picking his lies apart, he'll spit out another mountain of bullshit, and you'll be buried under it. I could go on and on, Alexei Kovalev says, but I think at this point you see where this is heading. See if any of this rings any bells if you covered Trump's presser or watched it online. God almighty, it's ringing bells like mad. That business about ad budgets are shrinking while his ratings are soaring. Well, again, he said BuzzFeed will suffer the consequences. Now, when he says that, that's a dog whistle to advertisers in a capitalist media universe to stop advertising with BuzzFeed. And beyond that, there's always his good buddy, billionaire, Silicon Valley thug, Peter Thiel, who has a history of fronting money for lawsuits to put entire web-based organizations completely out of business. Welcome to the future. Let's go over to the phones and check in with John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Bob.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Thanks for taking my call again.
My pleasure. Sorry you had to wait, but I just wanted to finish that piece.
Oh no, that's fine. That was a very interesting piece you just read off to us there. Who was that from again? I didn't quite catch it because I was
Alexei Kovalev, Alexey Kovalev, and he wrote that at medium.com.
Okay. So there's basically no doubt that Russia is pretty much a fascist oligarchy, because I was watching Tom Hartman today, and there was a guy he had on that was trying to say that everything, the claims about Russia and all the criticism towards Putin and Russia is absurd, the guy said.
What's his name? I mean, Hartman's had him on before. In fact, our buddy Michael in Madison was commenting about it on Facebook, and I saw it earlier today. Pooty Poot is just vastly misunderstood, and he loves everybody, and he pets kittens, and blah, 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 blah.
Right. Yeah, I don't get it. You know, I know a lot of people from the Unicorn Sparkle Fart Brigade. I mean, last week when I talked to you, I told you that I don't know many liberals. That's actually, I wasn't really thinking about this, but it's not entirely true, because I meet with the local progressives in my town, and we're all going to try to run for local offices. I'm going to try to run for borough council and, try to get some actual real progressives in there. And so we meet every month. And a lot of these people were, you know, purists, as I like to call them. They voted for Jill Stein, some of them. And some of them voted for Hillary Clinton, and others said, oh, no, I'm going to vote for Jill Stein. And one guy even walked into the one right before the meeting we had right before the election. One guy walked in and plopped down a bunch of Jill Stein pamphlets. And I'm, you know, and I pulled him aside, you know, later on. I said, you know, we live in a swing state, right? And he looks at me and he goes, oh, don't worry, he's not going to get in there. Yeah, so the next time I saw him, next meeting it was, which was last month, I said, oh, yeah, so he's not going to get in there, huh? And the guy said, well, better than Hillary Clinton. You know, like, you have people like that all the time. And but these people don't want to hear about the Russia stuff, some of them. Other ones are concerned, but some of them just do not want to hear about the stuff with Russia. They you bring it up, I mean, then they look at you like you're from a different planet. And even in, like when I said the word resistance, I said, I'm part of the resistance. Some of these guys looked at, I don't know if they never heard of that before or something, but some of them kind of looked at me and kind of jarred their head to the side a little bit, like, what's he talking about? You know what I mean? Like I was some kind of a radical or something, you know? I don't think they realize how screwed that we actually are. And I don't see how they, if they're anybody who's smart, has to see how screwed we are. Just look at what the spectacle that went on yesterday. I mean, it's...
Well, exactly. It's and you know, when the people sort of look at you funny when you say the resistance, you got to understand, John, there are still a lot of people in this country who do not understand the gravity of what's coming at us. They think it's, right. You know, they think that that everything we're doing over here on whatever we call the progressives, the vocabulary fails, but whatever we're doing over here, it's just sour grapes. You know, we're just pissed off because our side didn't win.
Oh, it's more than that, because
well, precisely, you know that, but they don't. And so part of the job, if they are even remotely open to being spoke to talking about it, and I'm not talking about Trumpanzees, is to explain this is fascism. This is the real deal. This isn't a political disagreement. This is the Constitution of the United States in full on crisis. You know, I ranted last night about what constitutional crisis means, and I mean we're there, we're living it.
Yeah, we absolutely are, and you know they don't understand the gravity of what's coming. And because like if Marco Rubio or Kasich or somebody would have got the nomination, I might not have voted for Hillary Clinton. Probably wouldn't have voted for them, but I wouldn't be like freaking out right now. I wouldn't be nervous. I wouldn't have you know.
Well, no, John, because some of this stuff is predictable. Okay. If Jebbia had gotten the nomination, well, we know, I mean, we got two presidents worth of them, 12 years. We know how Bushes behave in the White House.
Right.
Okay. They're old guard Republicans. We disagree with them and they do some nasty shit, but we don't doubt the fact that at least they're going to push forward some element. We know that they're not owned by a fascist dictator in a foreign country. How's that?
Right. Exactly. I mean, if anything, they would probably they'd probably be at odds with somebody like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Rubio... Look, all it takes is a glance at Rubio, and you immediately understand that he's a little guy with big ambitions. I mean, if you take the ambition out of Marco Rubio, he disappears.
Right. He's kind of an empty suit.
Even Ted Cruz, you recognize, is a theocratic maniac. All right?
Yeah.
But we're not dealing with any of that, John.
No.
This is real goose-stepping fascism. As the old saying went, wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross.
Right.
Here.
Anybody who doesn't see it. Yeah, it's actually here before he even took office. You can tell that. Because he's meeting with all these people. He's meeting with reportedly met with the fascist French Marine Le Pen. What is another? Well, I guess she's not in office yet over there. I don't know how their process works, but I know she's been running for about as long as he's been running here. There's reports that she was cited in Trump Tower today, and she's pretty damn far right. You know, so this is a global. This isn't just as people say. Oh, I'm just going to flee to Canada. Well, here's the thing. It's only a matter of time before this happens to Canada, because like you said before and like Malloy has said before, this is global. This is a global phenomenon, and you can see it happening in everywhere. And, you know, and it's very disturbing to me. I mean, I can't stress it to people enough. And this is why I love listening to your show and Malloy's show, because I feel better, because I'm, you know, it's like therapy to me. It really is, because there's people that because if I try to talk about this to some of my family members, they get annoyed, you know, and I was talking to my dad about how they are going to repeal Obamacare, and he's a disabled vet who's on Obamacare. And, you know, he's a lifelong Democrat. And, you know, of course he voted for Hillary Clinton, but, you know, he recognizes, like, he hates Republicans just like I do. And he recognizes that he's going to be left with nothing. They're taking this stuff away from us. You know, even people with pre-existing conditions, like there's people out there who probably think they're okay because they're on health insurance from their employer. But guess what? When that employer finds out that they don't have to cover you if you have a pre-existing condition, I don't know. Maybe you are privy to this knowledge, but I think they can probably kick you off, right?
Well, the whole point of the Affordable Care Act is that it compels employers who employ X number of employees or more to provide health insurance coverage. For its full-time employees.
And
once that's gone, they ain't got to.
So they're gonna yank it.
Sure. Why spend the money? We are economically downtrodden here in West Trump, Virginia. And one of the problems we have is that nobody can get full-time work. That is, of course, blamed on the Affordable Care Act. Because if you get 40 hours a week, you have to have health insurance.
Right.
So nobody can get more than, you know, 32, 33, 34 hours a week. But here's the fun part. Nobody's going to get full-time work once the Affordable Care Act is repealed, because this has proven to be a real godsend. Because it also means no OT.
Yeah. Yes. And they're going to take away, they're rolling back some of the overtime rules too. You know, they say that the biggest fallacy of this election, and I would argue is pretty much propaganda, which I called my congressman today to bitch at him about this, you know, the affordable health care, you know, and I told him that the biggest fallacy of this election is that the Democrats left the working class behind. I mean, that might be true to some, maybe a certain extent. But that's false. That is not true, because the working man or the blue collar worker or whatever you want to call them, the working class need health care. They like the mainstream regulations like overtime and stuff like that. They like this kind of stuff, and that benefits the working class. And what are these people doing? They're taking that away from the working class. So that was the biggest fallacy. And it gets under my skin when I hear the for-profit media, for one thing, saying that the Democrats left the working class behind. And you even see some so-called progressives putting, you know, journalists doing pieces on that, like at Vox. The Democrats, you know, didn't work out for the working people and stuff like that. It's like, what do you mean? I mean, look what the Republicans are doing. Like, they're any better? Really?
Well, they're not, but see, that's a trope that is largely promulgated by the purity the purity ponies, and it completely ignores, for instance, the fact that the Democrats started hemorrhaging members and voters as far back as Ronald Reagan. Okay. Now, Reagan, the so-called Reagan Democrats flocked to Reagan, John, that wasn't because of goddamn Hillary and her neoliberal policies. Had not a goddamn thing to do with it, okay?
Right.
But it gets transposed over. The word neoliberal itself has lost its meaning, okay? Neoliberal actually meant something 5-10 years ago. Now it's just bandied about by the purity ponies with a general definition of anything I don't like. Okay? I mean, among certain quarters, to call somebody a neoliberal is the same as calling a five-year-old calling somebody a poopy head.
Right. Yeah.
The phrase has actually had all the meaning sucked out of it because it's been so used and abused by people who don't really know what it means in the first place.
That's like a European term, kind of. When you say like that, that's more or less a. Isn't that where that originated from? Is Europe?
Well, it originates, and this is a little too inside baseball, but just briefly. First of all, there's the word liberal, which is a term that comes out of the 18th century Enlightenment. Okay, I mean, and
back
forward.
That far.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, Matthew Arnold. Okay, people like that. Liberal democracy does not mean what we mean when we say liberal.
Right.
And right wingers can engage in liberalism as much as any liberal. Again, separate meanings. So when you say neoliberal is actually a back reference to that broader meaning of liberal, and not the meaning of liberal that the Republicans turned into such a dirty word for the last 40 years. They are entirely separate conceptual things.
Okay, it's not the opposite of neoconservative, right? Necessarily.
It's not. Although that's another, you know, it began to be used interchangeably.
Oh, okay.
But see, now what we used to call neoconservatives, another phrase has oozed into the dialogue, and now there are paleoconservatives.
Huh, that's a first. I never heard of that.
Oh, look it up. It's there.
Okay.
But neoliberalism does take into account things like globalism, and it does take and it does encompass things like the notion, the TINA, T-I-N-A notion that Margaret Thatcher put forward, that there is no alternative.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
What does that mean? Like, there is...
It's most often used in conjunction with trade and global trade and borderless trade and the falling of trade barriers and you know, that line of thought, which is also lumped into neoliberal.
Right, okay. That's the whole point of Brexit. I guess they were trying to get away from that. But what people don't understand is, and I'm all for fair trade, but fair trade means trade, not no trade. You know, some of these people, they actually want to be 100% like isolationist or something, you know, where they don't want to do trade at all. Which we all want to see more products being made in the U.S., of course. But if we stop, cut ourselves off from the rest of the world and stop trading, we could, like you guys, like you and Ron from the far frozen north were talking about yesterday, about how Canada, that will hurt places like Canada if we completely freeze, you know, like trade with anybody else. Not only that, but people aren't going to buy our products. We're not going to have a net. We're not going to have, like, a lot of exports, you know, like we're not going to get a lot of money from that. And, you know, there's going to be companies that are going to be hurting in the U.S. because you won't be able to sell products, you know, to different countries. I mean, do I have that right? I don't know. That's kind of a something that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're close enough for government work, as the saying goes.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, we're all. Go ahead.
No,
go
you
ahead.
Please.
Sorry. I was just going to say we're all for, you know, fair trade, you know, but I don't want to cut ourselves. I don't want us to cut our noses off though either, despite our face.
Well, I can, yeah, but we've got it.
We've got to solve some basic problems before we can go. Before we can go forward with the resistance, we've got to have people who are willing to resist. And there are still too many people out there to sort of loop the conversation back. There's still too many people out there saying, "Oh, you know, I mean, we just got to give him a chance."
Yeah, just like Nicole Kidman today.
Oh no! What? No, tell
me. Well, in an interview, you know Nicole Kidman, I'm sure. In an interview, she said, "We all need to support Trump." Well, no, I'm sorry. That's kind of a misleading statement from it. She said, I'm trying to paraphrase here, he's going to be the president, and we need to accept that. But, of course, the right wing and Fox News and Breitbart and all those people are going, Nicole Kidman says support Trump. She's a Trump supporter. Now, I'm willing to guess that I'm thinking she probably didn't vote for Donald Trump. Maybe I'm wrong, but it still drives me nuts that after what – the spectacle that we saw yesterday, you have people like that saying, we need to accept him as a president, even though he acted like a goddamn tyrant yesterday and he's not even in office yet. And then not only that, but she's, surprise, surprise, not going to lose her health care, you know, and not only that.
And neither are any of the sons of bitches who voted the way they voted yesterday in the Senate. They've got the best socialized medicine that the American people can provide them, and nothing's going to happen to them.
That's why if I were ever to get into Congress with a majority of Democrats, I would propose a bill to take away the health care from anybody who voted to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act or the Affordable Care Act. And I'm sure your senator, Joe Manchin, might have done it, right?
Joe got this one right.
Did he really? Because I hear he was talking about voting against it a couple of years ago, or voting to repeal it a couple of years ago.
No, even a blind he wants to fix it, not destroy it. That's what he says. But even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, wow, I'm surprised. Well, I wanted to also add that RFK Jr. I'm sure you know who that is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think you're about. I think you're about to. I read this, and it just made me cringe.
It drove me nuts. He's going to take a, what is it? A position in the Trump, administration. But he's going to do something about. He's going to be on some kind of a panel that researches.
Yeah, it's a vaxxer panel.
Right. Anti-vaxxer panel, really, you know. Now, he's trying to clear the air and say, I heard from somebody, and this was through a comment on, I think it was YouTube, where they said he recalled it, or he retracted his agreement to do this or something like that. But the fact that he met with Donald Trump is, A, normalizing it, and B, collaborating with him, you know.
He went past normalizing. And it is far more dangerous collaborating.
Yeah, and not just any kind of collaborating. We're talking about, you know, so I saw a piece that said that this he might very well have one of the most dangerous positions in the Trump administration. I don't know.
Well, the idea that we're going to foster further controversy about vaccines is only going to kill people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the bottom line. Because RFK Jr., for all the good work he's done environmentally, is dead wrong about the vaccine business. And of course, as a plaintiff's lawyer, he has a vested interest in ginning this kind of stuff up, because a massive lawsuit could make someone lots richer than they already are.
Yeah, that's true. And he's very much involved with that. You know, he's on Ring of Fire Radio with Mike Papantonio, And I think Mike Papantonio is a lawyer when it comes in with.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Papantonio, he was on, you know, Sam Cedar.
Oh, yeah. They all work together.
Well, yeah, he was on. Sam Cedar was kind of, they kind of got into a little bit of a spat almost. And because Sam Cedar was kind of grilling him, friendly grilling him on Bobby Kennedy's role in the Trump administration, so-called role. And he's kind of.
Well, I can't imagine that sits well with Sam. I know Sam.
Right. Yeah, Sam.
I mean, it's not like we talk once a week or anything, but we've had some conversations over the course of the years at various radio rows and whatnot. And Sam's, you know, Sam's progressive bona fides are beyond question. And
yeah,
and I'm very serious when I say no collaboration. Anything you do that benefits the Trump administration harms the United States of America. Let's get all the way down to the ground on that, John. Yeah, any disagreement? If
no,
you collaborate,
like
if you help Trump, you're hurting America.
That's very well put.
Because all that "Make America Great Again" horse shit is, you know, there's a wonderful final Luther Obama's anger translator video out there. Shorty in L.A. sent it to me, and a couple other people did as well. And there's this one moment where Luther screams, "Only reason for that hat, only reason he ran is because his factory in China made too many red hats."
Was that like a meme?
No, it's a video. You can find it over at Comedy Central. It's an appearance on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, but it's Luther the Anger Translator's final installment. But the point I was going for is that Trump has no interest in the United States. The only interest he has is in Trump. He is narcissistic. He is sociopathic. He is probably deeply brain damaged from some cause at this point. And
yeah.
and his only interest is in self-aggrandizement at the expense of the rest of us. And he knows the people who voted for him are rubes. Okay? He told them to their face that they're rubes. I love the uneducated.
Yeah.
All right.
And he
and so anything that you do that helps him is harming America. And you know, there needs to be a collaborator list.
Oh, I'm making one. I have one. I have I did take Al Gore off of it because I didn't really consider him collaborating really. I thought that was more of a best, it was what I call an interest visit, where it was in his best interest, or and he thought that
he was trying to do what he was trying to make a pitch for not abrogating the Paris Climate Accords, and I understand that. Leo DiCaprio, he's not going to he's a UN special representative, so it made sense for him to go and you know have a conversation or some such.
Yeah,
if you go and you take a job from Trump, you're collaborating.
Yeah. Well, what about Kanye West? I consider him collaborating kind of too.
He absolutely is. But I don't know if Kanye West actually has the mental capacity to know what he's doing.
Yeah, you never know. And there's other people that I have on the list there. Tulsi Gabbard.
A lot of people got all damp in their maiden forms over Tulsi Gabbard, but the fact of the matter is the woman is a war hawk. All right? She's deeply anti-Muslim, and so the anti-Muslim bias she has dovetailed nicely with the anti-Muslim bias that Trump has.
Okay. With her, I noticed that when Hillary Clinton got the nomination, which, of course, she was a big Bernie stomper. She stomped for Bernie a lot, which is great. You know, I mean, I was for Bernie. I think I forgot to tell you that, but I was for Bernie. I voted for Bernie in the primary and then in the general. I wasn't happy with Hillary Clinton, and I know what what the DNC was supposed to be involved with, but I went ahead and voted for her anyway. But, you know, she, you know, I saw her and Bernie at an event in Millersville College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And you know, but she, I noticed on her Twitter, after she met with Trump, I went on her Twitter to see if she had any kind of criticism about Trump since he announced his presidency in June of 2015. Nothing. Not one bad negative thing. Not one denunciation about some of the vile, disgusting things he said or done. Nothing. Not one thing. She's criticized Hillary Clinton. She's praised Trump a couple of times on his supposed stances on Syria. You know, so I look at that and I'm trying to think, is she actually like a secret Trump supporter? I'm wondering if she actually went into the voting booth.
Look, she's a militarist, okay?
Right.
She's a militarist. And okay. To that end, she's probably more ideologically aligned with John McCain than she is with Bernie Sanders.
Wow. She has no business being in a Democratic Party because, for one thing, her dad was a big-time right-wing Republican.
Yeah, but she wasn't going to get elected. She wasn't going into Congress in Hawaii as a damn Republican.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. So she basically is a Republican then. Huh. And her LGBT rights or her LGBT record isn't very good. You know, she's been against LGBT rights and stuff. So I do think that she's a right winger to a certain extent. But, you know, there's a lot of other people that I did make a list of people that are caught because I got so pissed off one day and all these people fawning over Trump and genuflecting for him. I got a list out and I started, I had it somewhere, but, you know, I started making this list about, I also have a list about all the other.
Well, I have an update thing for you, John. Jeremy in Vermont just wrote in. And he said the Trump people rescinded that RFK Jr. appointment yesterday. Evidently, Trump did it without telling them. That said, RFK Jr. is an anti-vaxxer.
Oh, wow. So he basically got... Now, that's even worse for him. Because they rejected him, right?
Yeah. That's what Jeremy's telling me.
I did hear about that. Somebody recalled it. And, well, Sam Peter was telling Mike Papatonio was getting, seemed to be getting like, he was, seemed like he was getting a little irritated with Sam Peter. And he said, he goes, this doesn't really look good. You know, he's like, we're getting a lot of emails, we're getting a lot of tweets, and are wondering if he's a Trump supporter now or whatever, if he's a Trump guy. Everybody's painting him to be an anti-vaxxer Trump guy. And Papatonio said, he's not an anti-vaxxer. He said, all his kids are vaccinated. So, I mean, I don't know. You never know anymore, man. Like, Trump has this.
Well,
thing about
okay,
him
okay. Let's try to narrow this a little bit because I think I know a little bit about what's going on here. RFK Jr.,
sure.
His primary concern is with a mercury based preservative additive called thimerosal.
Okay.
He thinks that there is a link between the preservative thimerosal and autism.
Huh, really? That is what Trump said, too, kind of, right?
Well, yeah. But if... But thimerosal is, of course, a manufactured product. And in the realm of high-dollar litigation, products liability, class actions, can make a damn fortune for the lawyer who can successfully prosecute one.
Oh, okay.
And so...
And he's a lawyer.
and you know, it's not like he's a corporate lawyer. Okay, he's not and he's not a criminal defense lawyer. He does lawyering that is along the lines of products liability, people getting poisoned, people getting harmed by environmental toxins, so-called toxic torts. Okay, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and just goon on RFK Jr. because his heart's in the right place on a lot of stuff.
Right.
But he's got a bee in his bonnet and a burr under his saddle about thimerosal. And interestingly,
thimerosal has in fact been removed from a lot of vaccines. It was a preservative. It made it possible for the vaccines to remain effective longer than if they didn't have it, I guess.
So what's the big deal then if it's not in it anymore?
Well, it's still, I presume that it's still in some stuff. But I remember reading years ago that it had been removed from a number of vaccines. I mean, look, there's no getting around the fact that things can go wrong, all right? When I was born in 1963. And I got my, and when I started getting my round of vaccines, when it came time for me to get my, DPT, I think it was. It was either the DPT or the DPT booster. Diphtheria, pertussis, and typhoid or whatever, typhus. They gave me that shot, and from the waist down, I was a baby. And from the waist down, I swelled up to twice normal size and lost all feeling from the waist down.
Really?
Yeah.
How they know? Well, I guess they can, you know, do a...
And my father, my father told me the story later. He said, I was prepared to go to prison because I was going to kill me a doctor.
Oh, sure.
If you didn't get well.
Sure.
And we never, and we never, and I was never taken back to that doctor.
And that was, you know, probably one of the only doctors around then at the, at that time, right? Because that's during the days where you only, you had that one. I know when I was growing up, there was like, you always went to the one doctor. There wasn't like all these different facilities around, you know. Is that about right?
Yeah. And by the way, Asa just informed me that thimerosal was taken out of childhood vaccines in the United States in 2001.
Oh, wow. So he's a little late to the party then.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, theoretically, you could still bring a lawsuit for people maybe who had been harmed prior to that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine how you wouldn't have just monumental statute of limitations problems, but I'm not a high-flying plaintiff's lawyer, so maybe there's a way around it.
I have a lot of respect for RFK Jr. That's why I was a little bit put off by that. You know, I saw that and I said, oh, God, here we go. And I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of that. I'm wondering, I'm waiting for when Bernie Sanders gets called to Trump Tower. I'm waiting for that. Because, you know, I just have a feeling that they're going to, you know, he's going to meet with him or something about whatever, who knows. And the only thing that the one thing that I wouldn't be opposed to him meeting with is if they were to talk about single-payer health care. Because, I don't know, I mean, I think I said...
But what would be the point of that conversation? The House and the Senate Republicans are never going to pass single-payer health care. That's what that goes back to what I don't understand about the current situation. You know, the insurance companies love that welfare check they're getting because it's not a little one. It's a great big government money check.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. I know Malloy mentioned the other day that the American Medical Association is pleading them to do not repeal this without having something to replace it with, which we know damn well that whatever they'll replace it with, because I know it's going to be horrible. It's going to not be near as good as what
we have now. Sure it is. I mean, health savings accounts, really?
Yes, exactly.
And if you start putting $5 a week, let's see, how about instead of putting money in your kid's college fund, from the moment baby's born, you start putting $5 in her health care savings account. Well, by golly, by the time she's 30, she might be able to afford a fucking tonsillectomy.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely horrible. It's the, you know, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be like that or nothing at all. And these, I can't not believe that what this country just did to itself by electing this narcissistic, lying thug, and then, of course, putting all those, you know, given the Republicans the House and the Senate again. And
you left out mentally ill.
I left out a lot of things that, I mean, there's a lot of...
No, but I think we really have to try to drive home the point, John, that this guy
is mentally ill. Now,
oh yeah,
you know, and I don't say, you know, every Republican's mentally ill.
But Trump
is displaying too many symptoms.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Just look at. Did you ever see? Well, you know, the Art of the Deal was written by a guy named Tony Schwartz, and you ought to look into some of the interviews that he gave about Trump, and very interesting stuff. He said that he goes, first of all, if you really want to know what Trump is like, just look up the symptoms of sociopath on the internet. He's like,
or narcissistic personality disorder.
Right. And I think it's all of it. You know, I really do think that, I mean, Trump is so, he's an absolute psychopath. I mean, that one young girl was going to, or there was a lawsuit against him for child rape or something like that. Well, when she was about to come out, this was a week before the election or something, she was going to come public about it all. And she got really scared because his lawyer was threatening her lawyer and her. I mean, with physical bodily harm. I mean, it was that bad. But in one of the depositions, she said that Trump told her that if he told anybody, and another witness corroborated this statement, that if he told anybody, she told anybody, that he would kill her and her family just like he did with another girl. And I'm not saying that he did that. I don't know. I'm just saying I wouldn't put it past him. I really wouldn't. I mean, this guy is scary, and you could tell how people are obviously people are afraid of him. Like reporters, like that one reporter was pathetically begging him to ask his question after he said that CNN is fake news. He's like, please, you know, he's like basically begging Trump to ask the question, you know, and I don't understand why these people don't just look at this hog, say fuck you, and walk away. I don't understand it.
Access, John. Access. It is, okay. Like I said earlier in the program, it is their mother's milk. And yeah. if they behave in anything except fawning obsequy, their access will be harmed.
Isn't that a shame?
Well, I mean, you know, what's pathetic is that you can actually do real journalism without that deep access inside the administration. You just report on what the bastards are doing.
Right.
But yeah. because of the celebrity infotainment aspect of modern electronic media, if you don't have that access, you can't get the clicks. And if you can't get the clicks, you got no business.
Yeah. It is. It's all about that. It's all about the money and ratings, doesn't it mystify you that people actually thought that he was going to lose? And I mean, if you couldn't, the fact that nobody could see that coming.
Well, I mean, I predicted. I didn't predict he would win so much as I predicted Hillary would lose, and I stand by the reasons I put forward. I voted for her, but I also acknowledged that she was a terrible candidate who should never have received the nomination. Not only should she not have received the nomination, she should not have run. You know, like I said, when she lost the 2008 Democratic primary to a black guy whose middle name was Hussein, somebody should have pulled her aside and said, Hills, this is not your road. You just lost in a racist country to a black guy named whose middle name is Hussein. You can't lose. The next time you lose, it'll be really disastrous.
Right.
But nobody speaks that kind of truth to power, John, when you're inside those circles. Because once again, you'll get kicked out of the club, and you won't be a cool kid anymore, and you won't get to play reindeer games.
And you won't get money, just like Robbie Mook is going to get his big severance package from the Clinton campaign.
Oh, Robbie Mook made a goddamn fortune. And he's already probably working on some other sucker to make a fortune off of, too. And can do it. You know, yeah. Look,
The Harlem Globetrotters and the Washington Generals travel on the same bus, okay? And the Washington Generals get paid just like the Harlem Globetrotters get paid. The only difference being the Washington Generals get paid to lose.
Really? What do you mean by that?
Do you not know who the Harlem Globetrotters are?
Exhibition
basketball team, trick shots, trick plays, and there's always an opposite, and it's in the format of a basketball game, and there's always a team playing against them, and it's the Washington Generals, and okay. They get paid to lose.
Huh.
They don't win.
I did hear a reference to that. I don't know if it was you that made the reference once or twice. But I did hear some kind of a reference about the Washington. I think it was something like to the effect of they're about as good as the Washington Generals or something. You know, I forget who made that. It might have been you that made that reference. And, wow. Yeah, it's people like Robbie Mook, and he. I think actually I heard rumblings that he might run for office himself.
But he comes from a tradition. I mean, going back, I'm trying to think who was the campaign manager for. For Al Gore, Bob Schrum, maybe? And he had a long history of getting filthy rich by getting his candidates' ass handed to him.
Right. Well, see, with Bobby Mook, I did look into him a little bit. He's a homosexual man, and which that obviously doesn't matter. It's just it kind of, you know, gives you a little bit of a perspective, you know, in where he stands in the Democratic Party, you know. Which he's basically pretty loyal to the Democratic Party, obviously. But he's managed campaigns that were successful. But it was senators, state senator type thing, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff. Nothing as horribly, you know, catastrophic as what he just did with Hillary Clinton, you know, nothing that on that kind of level. But, you know, that was... it got to a point where everything she was doing and saying was wrong, that I just wanted to be like, call their campaign and be like, you need to get new campaign managers or we're going to be doing with the fascist, narcissistic piece of shit because he's going to kill you in the election. And that's what he did. And you know that they're still ringing the Hillary for prison bells, right?
Oh, sure. And of course, you know, soon to be Attorney General of the United States, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, was part of one of those lock her up chants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, John, yeah. I got to roll. It's been a great conversation. I'm really, really enjoying these, and I hope we can continue them.
All right. Yeah, I'll probably give you a call next week and see if you're not. See if the phone lines aren't tied up yet. I apologize for tying up the lines this long. I just get into a conversation with you because I don't get to talk to people.
No, no, no. Don't apologize. That's the purpose. That's how this is supposed to work. You know, okay. If somebody calls a radio program and they have to get every idea they have and they have to cram it into 2.5 minutes, there's not a lot of conversation takes place. But over the course of long form, what you get is a more thorough understanding of where the person's head is and where and what the actual import of the conversation is, because you have time to tease out these details.
Yeah. It's brilliant. That's why I love that you're 3 hours long. But yep.
All right. Well, John, we will talk soon call. And you know, just I guess you've got a little work ahead of you. Next time they cock their heads at you, explain to them what fascism means.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're going to be helping me on running for borough. So they're not all bad, but there's a couple that know it's fascism, but I try to let them know what's coming. They're going to find out.
Exactly. John, anyway, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too, Bob.
Thanks. Bye now. Bye. John calling from Central PA. Hey, it's 19 minutes past the hour and we are still $240 away from, being able to get out of the hole. Otherwise, tomorrow I'm going to have to turn the reverb on and yell for Lassie to see if maybe she can go and tell Tim, little Timmy, that the horn is down a well. It would be great if
we could knock out some or all of this damnable fundraising deficit. Okay? A couple of quick emails. Michael asked me to please re-announce and re-spell the name of the Russian author who wrote that stirring piece, A Message to My Doomed Colleagues in the American Media. Alexei Kovalev, A-L-E-X-E-Y-K-O-V-A-L-E-V, A-L-E-X-E-Y. And you'll find the piece over at medium.com. A Message to My Doomed Colleagues in the American Media. K-O-V-A-L-E-V, not the hockey player. Mike said, I've been looking for Alexei Kovalev, and I keep getting the hockey player. That should help. Just put in, go to your browser, put in medium.com, A-L-E-X-E-Y-K-O-V-A-L-E-V, and maybe even A Message to My Doomed Colleagues in the American Media. Subject line, Unfunny Medicine, Steve in China writing, you're forgetting about quarterly performance and the investor confidence that goes with it. That big government money check is good, but given enough time, the insurance wizards can pump the consumers of their product to make up the difference. Right now, the biggest problem is how to transition from the government money to more money from the remaining pool of buyers over time. Profit is king here, and profit is tied to market confidence in the four-quarter fiscal year. Happy gaming, y'all! Regards, Steve, in China. Michael and Madison pointed out, you guys are right about Tulsi Gabbard. Looks like she's up for re-election in 2018. Of course, you know, she's a member of the House every 2 years. Would be nice if a formidable progressive challenged her in the primary. It's almost too bad the Obamas will be spending the next few years in D.C. because I'll bet Michelle could easily unseat her. This is probably a wild idea, but Pearl Jam's Eddie Vedder, who grew up in Chicago, played before President Obama's farewell address, and President Obama dropped in on him at his Hawaii home a few years back. I'm not sure how close they are, but maybe he should run against Gabbard. Not trying to be a sparkle pony purist, but we don't need collaborators. No, I don't think that's sparkle pony. I think that's realism. Oh, and by the way, Ron in Raleigh points out one more thing. Steve King said today that as opposed to a Medicaid expansion, we should block grant Medicaid funds to the states because the states know best how to help their people. Yeah, see, when you block grant, then Republican governors get to dole out the money to their cronies instead of taking care of sick people. Cool, huh? And they can make sure that that nobody can use it to... Oh, never mind. Fetuses. Oh, right. Hey, as we sit around hoping to knock out that $240 fundraising deficit, looky, it's our buddy the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry.
Hey,
how you doing, man?
Not too good. Found out my friend died yesterday. Had to find out on the internet.
That's terrible. I mean, what happened?
I don't know. I mean, I've just seen the releases about his passing. I know he was in the hospital. I don't know exactly. Well, I mean, I knew he had health issues, but you know, he never gave me specifics, and I never asked about it. I wasn't even able to talk about this publicly. I'm breaking this now on your show. He was the co-editor of the Aboriginal Press News Service for many years.
Your colleague, your co-editor.
He was my co-editor. You know, he worked with us anonymously under the pseudonym of John, but you know, he was in it with me, and we basically dealt by email. You know, like you and I, we've never met.
Right.
There's been several people that have actually passed on that I've worked with internationally that I've never met. And, you know, I mean, I consider you a friend of mine, and the same with him. You know, he was my colleague, and I'm pretty upset because, you know, I didn't know that he was ill. And, you know, it's just one of those things that I had to find out on the net.
That's horrible. That's horrible, and it's heartbreaking, and I'm so very sorry.
Yeah, you know, I mean, thanks, but, you know, there was a lot of people. If you go on Twitter and on Facebook and if you look up at, you know, hashtag off the Manuel, you see how important this man was for occupied Canada in terms of standing up for First Nations people's rights. He was there internationally. I mean, he was filing grievances for Canadian Indigenous peoples in the United Nations. He worked with many, many different groups on the environment. He was out there. And in order for him to get a lot of things across, he came through our agency because he wasn't able to do this, because he could have reflected badly on what he was trying to do and the way the politics are in Indian country, whether you're in occupied Canada or in lower 48. You know, you just don't speak for yourself. You speak for your entire community. So, you know, we were able to work on certain things that, you know, a lot of our press releases, some of the articles I've done, and many of the subjects that came up on the show, things that he couldn't come out and do. But he was able to do that with me. He was able to help me out with that anonymously. So that's how my day began, seeing that. And having said that, I mean, you know, it is what the fuck it is. You know, Russia has bought themselves a politician, finally. They've been trying to do this for a long goddamn time. And people who still think that somehow Russia is still the Soviet fucking Union, you know, I mean, this, you know, we're in such a muck here that is fucking unreal. We're in such bad goddamn shape here. And Obama really left it fucked up, you know, in terms of actual social justice. I mean, he saved capitalism, and he should be given credit for that. But when it comes to dealing with...
Well, but the capitalist didn't even have the damn grace to be grateful for that.
No, not at all. Because, see, that's what a nigga's supposed to do. You know, he was supposed to help out master. He's supposed to help out white people and you know, go home empty-handed without a goddamn thing in his pockets to his family. That's what you're supposed to do. Because I've had enough white, racist, drunk people say that to me, you know, or high on coke. You know, we're here to serve you. You know, your life doesn't mean any goddamn thing outside of mine. So, you know, yeah, he came in, saved the motherfucking system, did what the fuck anybody would have done to keep the fucking system rolling. Now, we can talk about Hank Paulson and all these other fucking lowlives and shit that got their money and made sure that the rest of their fucking pals got their money. Yeah, okay, the ship's afloat, but you got to pay us in order for this to happen. We're not going to do this because we give a damn about the system. You know, so you got Tillerson saying, you know, this, that about Russia. Then you got Trump forgiving Assange after he called for his death a couple of years ago. You got Sessions saying that he's not a racist. He has his. Yeah, and, you know, that's one thing we can talk about. What is it with people getting upset with folks pointing out the hypocrisy of somebody like Jeff Sessions making sure that everybody can see his Asian grandchildren behind him? They came down on the reporter, but not down on Jeff Sessions. How does that work out?
Well, I'm just angry. There are so many aspects to all of this that make me feel like I'm straight through the looking glass at this point. I mean, I freely acknowledge, and I have pointed out over the years, the shortcomings of the Obama administration in 8 years. I mean, my God, I as much as anybody have a right to be aggrieved, because for all the highfalutin talk, he sat blithely by while Appalachia was blown to smithereens and people were poisoned and goddamn died and did absolutely nothing about it. Okay? Oh, but what about the stream protection rule, Bob? Well, that's going to be rolled back in about 10, 15 days, if not before. And you know, for all the talk about climate change, next to no talk at all about the cradle of climate change. Yeah, I get being upset and unhappy with what did not get accomplished, even from an executive order standpoint. But it was awful damn hard, angry. It was awful damn hard to watch that speech a couple of nights ago and hear that eloquent man, because he is eloquent. And then the next morning, turn on the feed and watch a man who can't use a word with more than four syllables. I mean, do you realize the biggest word that Donald Trump uses is unbelievable?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course it is.
I mean, it is physically painful to me to hear that boob speak. That narcissistic monster. And for all of his shortcomings, I think we're going to find out pretty damn fast that we at least had a competent administrator of the empire.
Yeah, but he was a nigger, so that doesn't matter. That's going to be overlooked. That's going to be overlooked. Oh, angry. I can't believe you. You really believe the CIA and the FBI? You really believe this crap against Russia? Well, that's funny. You believe that Obama was born in Indonesia.
Kenya.
Well, down here or up here or over here in Portlandia, half of the conservatives I know either believe that he was born in Indonesia. The other half says Kenya. Right? And then if you go online, you know, his mother's a gorilla, his wife is an orangutan, and his children are monkeys. But they had no animosity against the Obamas. They just believed that he was anti-white. That's all. Because he was every day whipping up racial hatred. And I'm like, well, how exactly did he do that? Well, I mean, give him a break, Angry.
Every time he did a State of the Union address, he ended it with that Black Power salute. I mean, don't you remember?
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I don't. I was looking for it. I kept hearing the year up to his election in 2007, 2008, that I was going to see all kinds of Black Power things. I kept hearing this from Black people.
And all, you know, all those times that he closed out his weekly radio address by saying "Salam Aleikum, y'all."
You know, none of that happened. I mean, just a few days ago, he's so pro goddamn Muslim. It's sickening. I'm like, really? That's funny, because he's been killing Muslims. Do you read the news? You know how many people have been accidentally wiped out, turned into red dust, and so. And he's just like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and you know, he hates Israel. He hates him so much that he engineered a $38.4 billion giveaway to him. Don't you know that there's some little kids going to shitty schools who wish that Obama hated them $38 billion worth?
Yeah, but again, he's not handing money to these particular white people. So, you know, he's anti-white because they don't have anything. So he must be against them because they don't want to blame people like Jeff Sessions or Trump for fucking him over. You know, or the fact that... how many different goddamn mobsters are being named right now by Scott Dworkin on Twitter that are directly connected to Trump? They're even naming Giuliani now as an associate of the Russian mob. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous that this has gone this far. And now there's an investigation into Comey on why he was, you know, going to the press about, you know, Clinton's emails, which nobody really gives a fuck about.
Oh, yeah, we're going to investigate. Yeah. I saw that news break today. We're going to investigate the open barn door now that the horse is 50 miles down the goddamn road.
Yeah, who gives a goddamn, you know? I mean, and then this whole golden showers thing. Could you imagine if this was about Obama? Oh, it's unsubstantiated. I can't believe you're spreading this. That's funny. You motherfuckers are pumping all kinds of unsubstantiated shit about Obama, and you still are. George Soros. You know,
It's not like they've suddenly quit saying Hillary killed Vince Foster.
Oh, yeah, they're still talking that crap. I mean, I'm not a particular fan of Nancy Pelosi, especially after she said that impeachment was off the table. She lost any support she had from me, all right? But, I mean, for them to be saying now that she's a racist, that's what's been going on all day today. Nancy Pelosi is a racist. Democrats are full of racists. I'm like, that's funny. I see all these blind spots in the Democratic Party, and I'm looking at the Trump team, and all I see are white folks.
Well,
what
I mean, there's
yeah, what about
Omarosa, man. I mean, doesn't,
what about
doesn't,
Doesn't, she's not black.
No,
she'll
but
tell you in a second.
Well, what about the woman that showed up on CNN with the bullet necklace? I mean, she's at least halfway, right?
Which one?
Oh, I can't remember her name. I just remember she's some admixture of human, and she wore a necklace made out of fucking bullets.
Oh, she's one of those. I got a heart on for Navy Team SEAL 6. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm impressed. Yeah. I mean. Yeah. They're gonna be out there, and they're always out there. They're the ones that are like, "Lynch that nigga, not me. He's hiding in the barn over there. See, right there. You see the light from the candle? Yeah, right there. He's in there with his family. They're probably hiding on the table. Lynch them, not me. I'm a good nigga. Lynch them, not me. Don't come after me. Lynch them. See, Cory Booker used to talk like that too. Now he's like, well, I think I better say something. Matter of fact, this might even...
Well, Cory Booker's got a pretty solid... He's got a pretty chronic case of the 2020s.
Yeah, but he also sees an opportunity. He can step up... Look, there's going to be a...
That's what I just said. He's got a case of the 2020s. He's feeling real presidential long about 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... It is a politics of cynicism. It's cynicism on my part, but it's also American politics. Do you think if he wasn't looking ahead to 2020, that Marco Rubio would have dared to take down Rex Tillerson the way he did?
At this point, Marco Polo Rubio, as Malloy says, is on a very slow horse. He and the rest of them, they don't have the balls. They really don't. They don't have the balls to come out and say exactly what Trump has been saying and getting away with it, because they know that they can't say it and get away with it. So, you know, they figure, okay, well, I'll back him and try to ride these coattails. Now, somebody mentioned Tulsi Gabbard not too long ago, right? Tulsi Gabbard is not white, and she makes a point. I'm Indian. I'm Hindu. But look at the Hindus that she's hooked up with. Look at the political connections in which she has. She's hooked up with the fascist party in India. She makes no bones about this. She hates Islam. I mean, hates Islam. Hates it pathologically. So, you know, here we go, where we have people of color, where we have women. But who the hell, you know, pick one of these people that actually give a fuck about doing anything righteous. And that includes Obama, you know, and that includes the current head of the Justice Department. That includes the former head of the Justice Department. They didn't really do anything. I mean, when Holder was in, he said that white people were cowards for not, you know, dealing with the history. He was right. After that, that was it. We never saw him again. And then they bring in somebody else. Yeah, she's of color, but what happened? Baltimore happened. You know, Ferguson happened.
Sandra Bland happened.
Absolutely nothing. Yeah, hey, a whole lot of things happen. But here you get 16 threats in a day, though, to synagogues across the country here this week so far. And the FBI, Homeland Security, they're on it. They said that they're going to give them extra security, that they're going to give them all of the assistance that they need to protect their places. How many? Many black churches have been taught in this country where they have spray painted vote Trump on them. How many black people have been killed in the street by cops? How many people have been assaulted and attacked by these goddamn supposedly quote unquote alt-right motherfucking white supremacists? A bunch of people were stabbed in Sacramento not too long ago. People have been beaten up at these Trump rallies. Where's the FBI and Homeland Security about this? You have motherfuckers threatening to walk down white Montana. I've been through Montana. There's a lot of good people in Montana who really think that the white supremacists are a bunch of fucking morons. But at the same time, they will not speak up if there's 12 people in a room and one of them talks a whole lot of white supremacist shit. They say, well, he's got a right to his opinion. But these motherfuckers are talking about in tip. Well, actually, they did. They published the names of Jewish people who lived in the goddamn community, threatened to walk down the fucking street.
Oh, dox the hell out of them.
Guns. Right? Where were the authorities? Where were the authorities? Let
a group of niggas get together and say, you know what, man, we're really sick of this bullshit, and we're going to march down Main Street, wherever the fuck that is, and we're going to say that we've goddamn had it, and we're bringing our fucking guns. You tell me, Brother Bob, what the fuck is going to happen?
They're going to die.
You know, you had a black police chief a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, who was shot. He didn't die. He was shot 3 times by a white supremacist in Ohio. He was the fucking police chief. How did that shit get explained away? Hey, oh, well, it was a fake bomb report. Somebody didn't like this guy and made a fake report. And, you know, when they came in, they didn't have a warning and they didn't knock. So basically, he had a right to shoot. I've never heard of such a goddamn thing. Now, we got 4 fucking cops that are suing the fucking prosecutor in the Freddie Gray case. Somehow his neck broke, his motherfucking spine separated, he died. We still don't know what crime he fucking committed, right? Did he commit a crime? But no, you know, somehow they were found not guilty of this man being broken. And now they're suing the fucking black female prosecutor, saying that she maliciously killed him, and 2 of these cops are black, right? So who am I supposed to trust, right?
Right, so, like I said a few minutes ago, down the rabbit hole. What are you supposed to think? I don't know. One development that deserves mentioning this evening, Angry, we were talking about what Barack Obama had done and had not done. Lo and behold, just before I went on the air, I got an alert. Barack Obama has finally decided to eliminate the wet foot, dry foot policy.
Wow. Why all of a sudden?
Oh, you know,
Haiti.
Well, yeah, I'm guessing to, you know, because it's one more thing that Trump will have to deal with in dismantling the Cuba rapprochement.
Oh, he's going to really try to damage it. He already has his people over there trying to fucking do business. That's already been exposed. He's a motherfucking liar. He's not going to try to crash that shit. What he's going to do is going to fucking hold a carrot. That's the same thing he's going to do to Puerto Rico. Okay, they got a new fucking governor that's talking about, oh, we demand statehood. Man, fuck you. You should be goddamn demanding in the fucking pendants. Fucking statehood. You're in that position because you're a fucking colony. And you've always been a goddamn colony. So, and look at Cuba. And what the fuck you see in Puerto Rico is what the fuck Cuba's going to look like in 25 goddamn years.
Well, yeah, who's better off? I mean, because they both have their own sets of problems. But who's better off right now? Cuba or Puerto Rico?
Cuba, and always fucking will be, because they give a fuck about their own goddamn people.
Because they have health care, they have massive, they have near 100% literacy, they have a very low postpartum death rate for their women, and children survive birth more often than they do in the United States.
Yeah, but they don't have people walking around talking about suicide as a way of life. They don't have people who identify with video games and want to speak Klingon at work. You know, they don't have motherfuckers live in fucking city and demand that the rest of us not just acknowledge it, which I don't have a problem with that, but have to change my motherfucking life to deal with your motherfucking fantasy. See, they don't have that kind of shit there yet. But they're bucking to sell them exactly what the fuck is happening here. And look at every fucking place in the world. I've left the goddamn United States, you know, to see the fucking planet. You have too. And when you go around and you see every fucking buddy that copies exactly what the fuck is happening here, they got the same fucking problems we have here. Japan now does not have a Yakuza problem. Japan now has a street crime fucking problem. You got young people who feel that, well, hey, they're gangbanging in LA, right? So I want to be an authentic American. You got Crips and Bloods in Thailand. How do you think that happened? The motherfucking internet. You know, if Americans are doing it, let's do it. Let's be like them. Let's
right. The metastasization of the American disease.
I mean, I watched a documentary with these people from India. They're tech experts. They work, you know, for American firms who don't want to pay these fucking wages in the States. And they have, you know, the money over there goes far. So what do they do? Do they eat their own food anymore? No. Do they dress in their own clothes anymore? No. They're fucking ordering Kentucky Fried fucking chicken in India.
They're ordering fast food. Their kids refuse to eat Indian food. They only want, you know, spaghetti and French fries and crap like that. And my wife and I watching, you know, this shit, and they're all overweight. The parents, the children, nobody looks fucking healthy. You know, the husband was saying, yeah, I'm having a hard time getting up the stairs. You know, I gained quite a bit of weight, you know, the past couple of years. And it's like everybody that's Americanized is the same fucking thing, going through the same goddamn problems, having the same psychological and fucking social issues. They can't find dates. They can't deal. Well, how do Americans deal with it? Okay, I'm going to do that. And when it doesn't work out, well, what's this American doing? You know, what's Dr. Oz talking about? It's fucking amazing to see this. And then here comes Trump, who is everything negative about the goddamn states. I mean, turns this place into a fucking banana republic. Oh, I want my daughter to have a security clearance. Oh, we can't do that. That looks bad. Okay, so give it to my son-in-law. Huh? Same thing. It's just as good. Fuck it. Let's do this. You know, I want to keep all my He said this.
Well, look, I mean, the dietary stuff is the spread of the hydrocarbon, the hydrocarbon corn connection. Because that's where all this obesity epidemic and the diabetes epidemic that begins in the 1980s is inextricably tied to things like high fructose corn syrup and to the massive influx of corn based food chemicals, maltodextrin, things like that. And so we export. We don't just export food. We export our ideas about food. You know, they're potato chips here in the UK. They're crisps. They're poison either way.
But they were smaller bags, and they didn't have all the crapola in them. You know, well, some time back. Now everything does.
I mean, look, the nature of the American food philosophy is such that when a person with advanced educational degrees still has a hard time sussing out the pronunciation of half of the ingredients on a bag, then you know that chemistry and chemistry and corporatism and capitalism have taken over. Michael Pollan wrote several years ago that no ingredient should be on anybody's shelves that his grandmother couldn't pronounce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But see, this is the problem, and it's something that is not broadly talked about, Angry. We are rapidly reaching, you know, a crisis. The only way that we can have the caloric consumption that we have in some parts of the world now is for people in other parts of the world to goddamn starve. And nobody likes to think about that, but it's a fact. I got kind of laughed at a little bit when China bought Smithfield Meats. I didn't think it was funny at all.
Oh.
Pork for a couple of billion people. Because the Chinese can't do it. Because, well, you can wind up buying rat that is being passed off as pork.
They're putting cardboard in pork buns in many districts. I know people who go to China pretty regularly. I mean, I haven't seen them in a while, but they said, yeah, the food over there has gotten really, really bad. And I asked them, I said, well, what do you think it is? And they all said the same thing to me. Well, a lot of these business people who are doing things like that have no sense of social responsibility. They're like, you know, the Maoist idea of, you know, the collective and all that, that's all gone. And it's every man for himself. So they just figure they'll just keep going until they get caught. And they're like, that's the idea with a lot of people. Make money, convert to Christianity, and somehow the riches are going to come in. And then when you make enough money, you move to London or Arcadia, L.A. I mean, this is the attitude. They have picked up all of the negativity of the West. And when people over here say,
saying, oh, well, I don't give a fuck about this Russia hack, and, well, the CIA does it over there. I don't give a fuck if they do this here. And so what if the whole world does this? I don't give a fuck if they have a dictator over here and all this. It's like, you know, really. So what you're basically saying is, just like, you know, gang rule, you know, fucking, you know, serve as the litmus test then for every motherfucking thing. So basically you want what Russia has, to where, you know, when a reporter fucking does something that pisses off somebody in a position of power, they get poisoned or they get shot in their motherfucking hallway. You know, they have to vamp out. I mean, look at this goddamn Golden Showers bullshit here. This is an MI6 fucking officer. I don't know what the fuck is up with the British press for naming this guy. What the fuck ever happened to a D notice? What the fuck is going on out here that they're trying to now discredit the motherfucking agent who pointed out that he's not the only motherfucking officer who worked on this shit? It's like, you know, come on. Come the fuck on. No, I do not trust when it comes to dealing with my goddamn issues, the intelligence services, but don't think that they're really ready to fucking turn this entire system upside down. That's crazy. None of them trust this motherfucker. They know that he's a fucking maniac. This is why the McCain and Palin ticket didn't get in. They knew McCain was fucking buck wild, and who the fucking controlled Palin? Nobody. So the powers to be said, fuck that, we're going to go with Obama, because at least we know what the fuck we're dealing with. Besides, we need a black face to open up Africa. Can't keep having a white guy in a position to do this. We can't do it. Just can't do it. You know, so you know, we got to get a black guy. We're going to find the whitest black man we can find, and Colin Powell, when it really comes down to brass tacks, will speak up like a black man. So let's go for Obama, because he's never going to do this. And he went through the entire 8 motherfucking years that he was in without ever speaking up like a black man once. You know?
Well, I mean, he got close by saying Trayvon Martin could have been his son.
Oh, well.
And white and that means, that's and alt white America lost its collective mind.
Yeah, they lost their goddamn minds, because I guess he was supposed to say what if Dylan Roof was my son, he would look like you know what? Because evidently that's what he was supposed to say. See, he was supposed to say something like that. He's supposed to say, well, you know, Trayvon Martin was a motherfucking thug, but, you know, Dylan Roof, well, you know, he had a point. I mean, it amazes me that fucking this shit is going on with Dylan Roof, and they still do not call that motherfucker a domestic terrorist. Still.
Yeah, well, that, I tweeted that out during the farewell address. When Barack Obama was going through his list of places where terrorism has taken place... Somehow or another, the terrorism that the white guy did in South Carolina didn't merit a mention.
Nope. None of them. Don Houser, Gerard and Amanda Miller. I mean, how many police officers were killed by white supremacists this year? Or not this year, last year?
Well, Jesus Christ, I had a story. I don't know what happened to it. It disappeared. About a... A white guy who shot a sheriff's deputy in the head with a shotgun. The yep. Sheriff's deputy survived well enough to retreat to safety and was eventually taken to the hospital. You know, the scattershot blast caught him in the head, the arm, the leg, the abdomen, things like that. But then they had a 9-hour standoff in which the white guy who was shooting at cops walked away without a scratch.
They talked to him like he was a gentle soul. You don't want to.
And afterwards, the sheriff said, "Well, I'm just glad we could de-escalate the situation without having anybody else get hurt."
Yep.
Hey, I got something here. I got a little audio we might enjoy as we run up toward the end of the program, courtesy of Michael in Madison. Michael sent me a note, and he said, Snoop Dogg promising to roast anyone who performs for Trump. And he said, I think you'll appreciate it. So let's give a quick listen, shall we?
Mm-hmm. So ain't nobody gonna perform for Donald Trump, huh? Which one of you jigaboo ass niggas gonna be the first one to do it? I'm waiting. I'm gonna roast the fuck out one of you Uncle Tom ass niggas for doing it. Which one of you niggas gonna do it first? Osby's the one that performs for himself.
Go out there and do a country song.
So ain't nobody gonna perform for Donald Trump, huh?
That's a little bit real.
Oh, yeah, that's real. But, you know, I still expect Kanye West to try, you know, he's trying to figure out a way he can do it and not, you know, face any repercussions. I understand he's got the top number one, top flight Bruce Springsteen cover band.
Yeah, the B Street Band. I'm still laughing about that.
Man, Miss Angry Indian was laughing since last night about that.
That's beautiful. You know? Okay, Ms. Angry shares my sense of the absurd.
Yeah, she was just like, you got to be fucking kidding. Because we were talking about Charlotte Church, who I like, who basically said, fuck you.
Well, she tweeted Trump 4 pile of shit emojis.
Yeah, that's pretty serious. It's coming from her.
Man, we got to laugh somewhere along the way, Angry, or we're all going to go ape shit mad bananas screaming.
Yeah.
And by the way, in the course of our conversation, I did look up your colleague, Arthur Manuel. Passed away at 66 years old, former chief of the Nesconleth Indian Band, chair of the Shuswap Nation Tribal Council, profound leader and activist in the National Indian Brotherhood, served as chief of the Nesconleth Indian Band near Chase, British Columbia. That's a hell of a man.
Yeah, I mean, he was... I mean, the fact that he took time to email me and to be supportive and stuff. And, I mean, we were supportive of each other. I mean, he's had some tight times, and you know, money was bad and things like that. And we tried to keep each other going. And you know, I admit I was really fucked up early this afternoon, and I'm still fucked up about it. I never met the guy, but he gave a damn. I mean, he really gave a fuck.
Oh, I love this quote. The hard work that indigenous people have been doing for decades and decades is coming to a head. We must change the fundamental relationship. We must ensure indigenous sovereignty before we lose this opportunity forever.
That man was out there emailing me with holes in his sweaters, in the elbows. You understand? I mean, he's, you know, written me. He said he had like $3 or $4 for the week, but he still showed up to those meetings. He still showed up to those protests. He still showed up to, you know, all of the things that he was asked to represent and stand by. And I mean, it's a hell of a fucking loss for the communities that he represented in Canada, and for the rest of us who had the pleasure to have known him at all, to have worked with him at all in any capacity. So, I don't know what else to say, man.
I'm glad you brought his life to our attention, so that as Mrs. Lohman says toward the end of Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid.
Indeed.
Angry, have yourself a good evening, my friend. It's always good talking to you.
As usual, do what you can. Please keep this man on the air. Go to headonradionetwork.com. Drop some coins. Peace.
Thanks, Angry. Take care. Our buddy, the Angry Indian. It is time to get out of here. Thanks very kindly to Brother Deacon Gerald for jumping in. We are now down to $220 to go in fundraising for the evening. That means by tomorrow evening, barring changes overnight, will be somewhere around $420 to finish the week. I'm sorry. I wish I was independently wealthy. I wish I'd hit the lottery or that something. But you know, y'all are what keeps this going. And I thank you very kindly, one and all, for your willingness to keep it going. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time in listening to the conversations and providing your input however you so do. from wherever all over this planet that you do. I got a lovely note from Graham in Australia, some words from Jen, who is traveling, that I hope to share with you tomorrow. I think it's a nice, it's a profound encapsulation of what it's been like for the last 16 years among people who are committed to a progressive future. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Great work coming along on the website. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.